Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Rhonda Wiedenbeck. Rhonda is the owner and baker at the new bakery called Beck's Bakery. Today we're going to talk about something that's a little different, and that is seaweed collection. That was a new thing for me. Rhonda and our friend Simona, we all went out and we collected seaweed. And when did you first start harvesting seaweed, and why did you do it?
So I was a student at HSU, and I was very much enamored with pond scum. Yum. And one of my professors there, Frank Shaughnessy, he noticed my intense interest and got me involved in the phycology class. And so his phycology class was primarily a Pacific Ocean seaweed class. And so I went out a few times with Frank, and he pointed out things like nori and wakame and stuff like that. And I was like, that's nori. That's the stuff you're eating, nori.
Yeah.
and it didn't look recognizable in its wild form. But anyway, I just kind of kept that in the back of my head because I've always been a forager type. You know, I grew up with a father who ran around every morning just looking for wild things to bring into the house for us to eat. And so I come from that kind of background there of what can I eat that's out growing. Uh-huh. So I think about 4 years ago, my friend Glee, who was a seaweed harvester, she took me out one day, and we spent the whole day out harvesting seaweed, and I learned so much from her. And then it's been a happy seaweed hunting every year since then.
And you've taught classes at the co-op too about seaweed collecting and foraging.
Yes, I've taught a couple classes. First, I began with a cooking class on how to cook with seaweed, and it was everything but sushi kind of thing, because there's other people who do that way, way better than I do. But during that class, people kept on asking, you know, can we harvest this locally, and can you show us how to do it? And I only knew a couple things at that point, so I wasn't quite ready to do it. And then I met up with my friend Glee, and she was the one who got me really acquainted with a lot of different things. So then I just taught one field class so far through the co-op, and then I've taught other friends, just brought people out with me and taught them.
You know, one of the things that I was wondering about were some of the regulations involved in collecting seaweed. And so I called Fish and Game and asked them about, like, you know, do you need a fishing license? And no, you don't need a fishing license to do that, which is good. And there isn't a closed season on collecting seaweed, so you don't have to worry about time of the year and which is the time that you can collect seaweed. I think there are times, though, that the tides are better, right?
So seasonally, there's things that you should consider in the fall after the seaweed gets pretty beat up and starts to fade and just doesn't look so good. And in the spring, it's just it's too young, it's too small. And so usually kind of midsummer is a good time. 4th of July is a nice time to start harvesting.
Oh, that's good to have a date like that. Uh-huh. Go. It's seaweed season.
Indeed.
And then one of the things that was kind of interesting to us is you and I and Simona were standing there on the beach with our bags of goodies there, was Fish and Game drove by. And then we were like, now, what is the aggregate weight that you can have? And
Well,
we found out that it's 10 pounds wet aggregate. So that's like all the different species that you get have to weigh 10 pounds or less per person.
Right.
So we were well within the limits there. And then there are species that you can't harvest.
Right. So there's the sea palms, which are those gorgeous looking little palm trees sitting right at the crash zone of the waves. Those aren't legal to harvest. There are commercial harvesters who get special permits and can get them. That's why you would find them in the stores for sale. But individuals can't harvest that. And then there's also eelgrasses, but you wouldn't really be harvesting those to eat anyway, but they're protected as well.
And then the other one was surfgrass. They told me, which must be similar.
Yes,
So what kinds of seaweeds can we harvest up here?
Yeah, so there's a wide variety of things. I kind of stick with a few that I'm really familiar with. Nori, of course, which is the one that kind of looks like a wet trash bag in the water.
That's what you'd said when we were collecting. That's exactly what it looked like. And we're so used to seeing it in a sheet, you know, that you buy in the store. So we were kind of surprised how it looked in the wild.
Right. This greenish brown wet trash bag. Then there's the wakame or alaria is the genus. And what else do we get? Oh, kombu is a real common one to get. Those I use a lot in my cooking. And while you're out there, there's fun ones to eat just while you're doing it. And that would be the rockweeds. There's the little rockweed, which is, you know, there would be the seaweed that you would see at the top of the rocks, the highest zonation of plants, often little rockweeds at the very top. And then beyond, just below that would be the regular rockweed. So we have little rockweed is called Pelvidiopsis. The regular, the bigger rockweed is Fucus. You can eat those while you're out there.
Now, there's also how to dress. You know, you had to tell us how to prepare because then we needed to bring a bag. And the good thing that you told us was bring a mesh bag because, yes, you know, you're trying to transport all that water back with you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, we brought a bunch of onion bags and cantaloupe bags and stuff like that with us. And then dressing was you want to dress in layers because, you know, often we're going out first thing in the morning and it's cold. But you also want to be able to wade in water. So it's kind of a funny get up to be wearing multiple layers on top with a vest or something and a hat and a scarf and then a skirt.
And then shoes that you can totally trash.
Right. Yeah, right.
Because they're going to get in the seaweed and they're going to get nasty.
Yeah, indeed.
And one of the things that you talked to us about when we were out there harvesting is not taking the whole plant, but really protecting the plants.
Yeah. You know, some of the locals call it picking, seaweed picking, and you're really not picking, you're cutting. You don't want to pull the plant up. It would be just like pulling up, you know, a plant that's rooted in the earth. You want to cut from there. And there's lots of guidelines now online. Seaweed harvesting has become really more popularized and bloggers are writing about it and stuff. So you can probably find some good guidelines online on how to do it. But, you know, you want to leave a couple inches of stalk left there. That's actually the stipe. And you want to leave that so that the plant can regenerate. You don't want to pull it all the way off.
I was really surprised how fast it was. I mean, how fast we got to that 10-pound aggregate limit per person. I mean, we went out there and the kombu was just amazing and we collected a lot of that. And that is one that I tend to use a lot of. Mm-hmm. But it was just really maybe we were out there a couple hours.
If even. Yeah. I mean, part of it was the socializing aspect of it, just afterwards to hang out and eat and talk about what we got and how we're going to use it and what we need to do next.
And one of the things that you had mentioned, we were out there and I didn't even notice that you were observant enough to see it, but there was a sea lion out there that was close by. So kind of keeping an eye out on the wildlife that's out there and staying a decent distance away so that you don't frighten them.
Right. There's rules about staying away from marine mammals and you don't want to activate them and get them upset. Yeah. And I can't remember what it was, but I just knew we needed to stay away.
Right.
I don't remember how far it was, but it was like, oh, looky there.
One of the things that then we needed to think about is what happens when we get home with this bag of wet, you know, sea-smelling stuff. So then we dehydrated it.
Yes. And that's something that you really don't want to let that sit for a while because you'll end up with this moribund, just foamy, nasty smelling thing. It goes quick when it's not in its environment.
And we had to rinse it.
Yeah.
Rinse it in clear water.
Right, because it's so full of sand. And then there's also little critters in there, the sea lice.
Well, that was
like that.
Funny because when I dehydrated, I thought I cleaned it really well. And I put it in my dehydrator and I pulled it out and I looked at it and I went, oh, look, shrimp. And Steve goes, that's not shrimp. That's sea lice. It's like, oh, that just doesn't sound near as tasty.
Yeah. And then there's the little snails, too, that taste like, you know, they don't, I don't know what they taste like when they're dried, but when you bite into one, you know it.
Oh.
So you have to kind of probe around your wildcrafted, self-dried seaweed so that you don't get goodies that you don't want to eat.
Yeah, and I noticed that when they did dry, that stuff seemed to come away from it fairly easy. It was fairly easy to end up with some really good product.
Yep, it was pretty easy. Yep, they just kind of drop off usually.
And tell me what your favorite dish is to use kombu.
Oh, kombu. I do a lot of beans, and so I always put a piece of kombu in my beans. It's supposed to help with digestion, so they don't give you the intestinal disruption.
Distress.
Good word. So I use a lot of kombu for that. And that's anytime I'm doing beans, I throw in kombu. And I think it adds a nuanced flavor to it. And it also helps, it provides some thickener to the sauce around the beans.
Well, this is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of talking with Rhonda Wiedenbeck, the owner and baker at the new bakery, Beck's Bakery.
Right chips and the cakes. Hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.